Welcome to the Faction Podcast. We're back again. It's actually the same three of us as last week for some continuity.
Consistent?
Yeah, exactly. So Nathan and I have been playing Pioneer again. Trent has been playing Double Masters Limited, but he's here to chime in as well and tell us that we are fools. So we're back. A couple events this weekend. I played the Moto Challenge on Sunday morning, and I actually managed top 8. So I went 6-1 and then lost in the quarterfinals to Thiago Separato, which meant that I did not go meet Nath and play in the Greensboro Store Championships, which was my plan until I ran out of time. But I believe Nath, Brayden, and Tristan all did. I think not a huge turnout. I think you said about 10 or 12 people, Nath?
Yeah, 10 people.
What was that event like? What was the meta? How did you all do?
There was no repeated decks except 2 mono green, as far as I'm aware. Everyone was playing a whole bunch of different stuff, which was cool. I managed to get the clutch 2-2 to not come 9th or 10th and miss out on the top 8 promo, which was phenomenal. Yeah, I played the Pyromancer deck, the blue-red Pyromancer deck, so just to give that a bit of a whirl, and I think that deck might be better than the Delver deck, so it's a lot more fun. You draw a lot more cards. But yeah, format was good. Hilariously, Devlin rocked up playing cards that I own, which means that he was jamming Siege Rhinos and 4-0'd the event and won it, which was hilarious. And I'm going to need to get his deck list off him, not for any other reason, but to look at it and be like, how did that happen?
I'm pretty sure that deck list came through Pog the day before.
I'm not surprised. That sounds about right. Yep. What a machine.
That sounds awesome. I did see someone on Reddit asking about, like, are there any playable Siege Rhino decks? And someone being like, well, you could do it with Charming Prince. And I was like, I'm listening.
So the answer is no, but good on you.
It makes me miss the Modern deck we played when Modern Horizons 2 first came out that was just pitching Siege Rhino to Grief, Endurance, and Solitude and playing Ephemerate.
Yeah, we were all over.
That's all.
That was so good. Well, no, it wasn't good. It was fun.
I mean, that's half the battle.
And Trent, you've been playing Double Masters Limited a little bit. How's that going?
Yeah, I had a big week, so I didn't play any there. And then had a meeting last night. And then instead of going to bed, I fired up some Double Masters. And pretty sure I showed you guys the 3 Wall of Omen, 4 Militia Bugler deck that went 204060.
That deck was sick.
And then I ran it back into 204060, and yeah, I played a few today. Did a bunch of Phantoms today, just getting my, because I actually didn't know it was there, just getting my feel for the format, but really enjoying the format, really enjoying having cards theoretically in my hand, not enjoying my opponent double queuing and taking all of my time for this match, but you know, can't have it all. But yeah, format seems like a lot of fun. There have been a few spots where, like, there's like 5 color nonsense that just doesn't look like a reasonable way to, like, it shouldn't work in the format, but it does.
Mm-hmm.
Which is nice, but yeah, as long as it doesn't divulge into everybody just doing that, then yeah, format's been really good so far, and we've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, having the Phantom with basically the cube pricing, right? You know, 2-1 gets your money back. I think that's phenomenal for these kind of sets, because you're not going to be able to play them when they're like $60 or $80 a draft. You're not going to get like 10 drafts in paper like you normally would.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, I didn't know they existed, and then I just got up this morning and logged on to look at... I said, oh, I'll play a Pioneer deck today because I want to play Pioneer, and instead I found this, and so I've sat here all day and not played Pioneer.
It seems like a win for Trent specifically.
Yeah, although I don't think I'm winning this one. Mulligan to 5 doesn't work too well.
I had a funny Melbourne interaction on Saturday before the event. I was obviously missing 3 cards from my deck and drove to Maze, didn't realize that they were having a high. Sorry, did realize they were having a Highlander tournament. So I was going to drop some cards off to Mike. Their event didn't fly, which was unfortunate. But I ended up picking up someone from that four player event to come and play the Pioneer event, which that was hilarious. Like, just mentioned that I was going to go play Pioneer at Greensboro, and they're like, "Can I come too?"
Who was that?
Brennan Garcia.
Brennan Crawford.
Crawford, sorry. Yes.
I was going to say, you were, but Brennan was probably firmly parked at Crown, so you wouldn't have found him.
Yeah, different Brennan, but fantastic outcome. I had a nice car ride across, and he also managed to scrape the 2-2 for the promo.
Yeah, what were the promos again? I remember them being pretty decent.
Yeah, they're good. Flame Slash for everyone that plays, which is just cool. Archmage's Charm for top 8, and Dark Confident for first.
Yeah, that Bob looks sick.
Really cool.
Yeah, nice.
Really cool prizes. And not that it's super relevant for Melbourne at the moment, but the premium stores had their store names printed on their cards, which is really cool.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah, that is super cool.
So the Star City ones and the Channel Fireball ones are going for a premium, as you expect.
Yeah, I can imagine. Meanwhile, I woke up at 6:45 a.m. to play a moto tournament, which, you know what? It's a lot better than playing 1 a.m. tournaments, which is what I used to do, so I'll take it. 7 a.m. is actually not so bad. It does limit your options for Saturday night, but doable, and then still have like a little bit of day left afterwards.
Yeah, they wrap up about 1 o'clock, which is quite nice. If you lost quicker, you actually would have had time to get across to Box Hill, I think. That's a Greensboro, I think.
Yeah, well, I would have got to Box Hill, but not quite to Greensboro. I finished at 1:15, I think, and the event was meant to start at 1:30. I got a message from Nate saying, I don't know if we're going to get enough to fire it. And I looked at the clock and went, well, I can be there in half an hour if they're not going to fire it.
Yeah.
And then decided to not do that. I did end up playing another league because I was just loving the deck so much. So, you know, didn't quite go into other things, but
yeah, it's a sick run with what I'd probably be pretty happy calling an Ian Brew, even if it is kind of an established deck in the format. I know you put a lot of work into it, so it's got to feel pretty special taking something. You know, you've had a big care in every card in the 75 into a top 8, and I mean, arguably playing as, you know, one of the better players in the world, it's kind of not a bad place to lose.
Yeah, for sure, it is a deck I've put a lot of time into building. I know there are. Humans is really interesting. We talked about this multiple times now, but they're still developing. I'd say that we're sort of down to like three common variants of humans now, sort of. There's mono white, Bant, and Pyre, but even the Pyre decks, like, I'm playing four colors. You can play two, you can play three. There's an all of humans deck. There's a lot of humans variants.
Five.
We will get into a little bit more depth about that deck in our sort of deep dive section at the end, but to touch on the meta developments, we've got data from both challenges. So for the Sunday challenge, which was 120 players, we actually, Simon Nielsen, absolute champion, went through and manually, by checking the replays, wrote down every single deck and then worked out like what decks, what the meta was and what the win percentages of each deck was, which is incredible. So
that's so cool. Yeah.
Big shout out to him. He said it took him several hours.
I believe that.
He said it took him several hours, but it was worth it because it solidified for him that mono green is actually playable and he doesn't need to go find another deck. So he reckoned he actually saved time overall.
Oh my God. That's amazing because he probably did save time.
I gotta say, this is the sort of thing that the vintage community does every week, actually. Like, every challenge they have a group of, like, people on their Discord who do this and put it in a giant spreadsheet. So they have data from every challenge on, like, every deck and all of their matchup percentages and everything. It's really cool. And it's sort of rare for us to have that much data for other formats of Magic Online. So it is very cool to see this. In terms of the meta, I would say, so last week we talked about the death of mono green. It's not back fully, but it is back a little bit. To touch on the 120 player Sunday PTQ, Rakdos Midrange was the most represented with 18 of 120, Phoenix at 15, then mono green at 11, and then there's a bit of a drop off to like Azorius Control, Rakdos Sack, Boros Heroic, Lotus Field, mono red, all at 8 or 7. So a bit of a gap in between. small-ish sample size, but of those, Rakdos Midrange and Monogreen both above 55% win rates, and Phoenix about 47. So possibly not, you know, people are a little bit prepared for Phoenix and have maybe Monogreen after the previous week where it disappeared had dropped off people's radars and came back a little bit, which I think is good for a meta to sort of have that rebound a little bit. The deck's not completely dead, and if you don't prepare for it, it can do well. It's a similar story in the Saturday Challenge with a lot of red-black. There were 8 red-black in the top 32 and 5 Phoenixes, and also there were 6 Rakdos decks, like the mid-range deck, in the top 16. So it's, you know, a third of the top 16, which is very impressive, obviously.
Ban Kalidus.
I'm all for that. Kalidus is very good against humans. Also, we'll get to humans later. Pyre Humans is very good against Rakdos mid-range, so, you know.
Ban Kalidus. What do you think's more egregious, Winota or Kalidus? I tell you, one is a 4-mana spell that won the game on the spot a high percentage of the time.
And the other one is also that.
And the other one is Winota.
No, one is definitely Kalidus.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think Kalidus is the sort of card that you want to be, like, playable in your format, but not a 4 of, because you're right, it's a 4-mana creature without an ETB ability. So, like, sometimes you play it, and then it gets Reflector Maged, and you just, like, lose so much tempo, or it gets Fatal Push, and, like, there's actually investment going on there.
It doesn't exit the battlefield ability when you exit their creatures from the battlefield.
That's true. Any turn where you play it and Fatal Push on the same turn feel very powerful. Overall, though, it looks like Red-Black continues to be kind of maybe the best deck now, but Phoenix is also picking up a lot. I saw a really cool Phoenix innovation from someone I played against who crushed me in the first game of my win in, actually, with Ominous Seas.
Yeah, that's cool.
Trent, do you know what this card does?
Yeah, I watched it beat.
Wow, what a slapdown.
Okay, yeah.
Moving along.
didn't mean to be rude, but you asked the question, so I give you an answer.
I did ask the question, it's true, and you did give me an answer.
Oh, I don't know if anybody just watched what happened there, but sick. Anyway, continue. Sorry, I'll stop talking about my sick beating I'm giving this guy. Just give him an absolute beatdown right now. Anyway, continue. Sorry about that. Sorry about the derailing.
Ominous Seas.
Oh, I've just mana leaked this. I've just mana leaked him twice in a row with the same gut with the same mana leak. How could he keep getting away with it? Yes! And I returned it! This is sick! Sorry.
Yeah, leave that in. That's good content.
Ominous Seas, one in a blue enchantment. Whenever you draw a card, put a counter on it, remove 8 counters from it, make an 8-8. It also has cycling for 2 mana. So the person I played against was playing this as sort of a secondary threat in their Phoenix deck, and it was sick against me. They played it on turn 2 in game 1, and they made an 8-8 on turn 5, and then another one on turn 6, and then another one on turn 7. And then another one on turn 9. And then I died.
Wow.
It did take all 4 8-8s to kill me. But it was... Also, the fact that it's instant speed was a huge problem. Because I can't get them to make it until I attack and they get to eat a thing. It was painful.
You did win that game, right?
Oh, yeah. I crushed them in game 2 and then we had a close game 3.
Yeah.
I won the games where they didn't play turn 2 Ominous Seas.
Mm-hmm.
But the game where they had the turn to Ominous Seas, it was brutal. So that's a really interesting innovation that obviously doesn't use the graveyard and rewards you for all of the wheel spinning you're already doing.
MTG Finance.
Yeah, if you want to go invest in that uncommon that might be played as a 2 of in one of the decks.
And not a lot of people open a Korea, that's what I'm saying.
It is true. I certainly don't have any. Fog certainly doesn't have any.
See?
That's not the advertisement we're trying to give here. Trent, Pog's out of stock at this uncommon, so don't go there.
No. Pog is out of stock of specifically Ominous Sea, for sure. I'm more than happy to say no to you on that one.
Nathan, you've been playing a bit of Rakdos midrange, right? What are your thoughts on the deck?
Yeah, I think the deck is as good as the format lets it be, in the sense that a lot of people are still wanting to be green, so a lot of people are registering mono blue and maybe not necessarily your humans deck, but against a lot of the other humans decks, I think it's really good. So I think it preys on the decks trying to prey on mono green, and I think there's more decks that are trying to prey on mono green than mono green. So more often than not, red black has a really good time. It's also got some tools to beat mono green, even though it's not a fun matchup. So I think it's really well positioned at the moment. I think you got to be prepared for it. And I think, based on which decks you don't want to lose to, obviously represented by the challenge results, red-black's a really good deck to pick up. Really reminiscent of, you know, Modern Jund from, 2015, 16?
Yep. What is the Phoenix matchup like? Because that seems to be the other big deck at the moment.
I haven't played a lot of it, but I can't imagine that unless they get a few early Phoenixes off that it's going to be that bad. I mean, you've already got four threats that that target the graveyard automatically in game one, and you've got a lot of removal spells, so I really think it comes down to how quickly you can close the game. And then you sideboard in a, you know, go blanks and hearses, so I don't think it's bad, but the Twitterverse seems to think it's not a great matchup.
Interesting.
I would imagine it comes down to treasure cruise. How many times can they cruise?
I totally believe that.
I'd say the first one makes the matchup close, and the second one would make blue-red pretty favored, which I would assume that's why blue-red has a very good game one against red-black, but then game 2-3, as you said, with your duresses, your go blanks, and your unlicensed hearses, so you actually can stop the pressure slash slow down the second treasure cruise, so it gives you just tons of leeway.
Yeah, and I think Ominous Seed would be insane against Red Black as well, for what it's worth. So, big shout out to that.
Yeah, I imagine Ominous Seed is really frustrating for Red Black because you can't remove it, and you're not really fighting over like the cantrips and that kind of thing. So it really puts a clock on you and makes you turn the corner on them.
Yeah, for sure.
So for the rest of the episode, we really wanted to dive into the Humans deck I played. I know when I tweeted about my top eight, I had few people reaching out with questions and just generally some interest in the deck. There was, of course, a Pyre Humans that top-8ed one of the challenges last week as well, so this is back-to-back weekends with this sort of deck top-8ing, so there is a little bit of success now for this grindy version of Humans. I'll make sure my most recent list is in the podcast description as well. Like all the Humans decks, still being figured out, to be honest. There's a lot changing day to day with specific cards, and you know, this isn't even the list I would play next weekend, I think, potentially. So to start with, the mana base, I'm playing 23 lands, including a Mutavolt. I don't know about the Mutavolt. I really like Mutavolt, but it is a four color deck, so maybe that's not reasonable. But it does do a lot of cool things. That is one of the sort of fringy flex slots, maybe, I guess. The core of the mana base, though, is you get 8 lands that tap for any color of human. This is the reason the deck exists, and the reason the 4-color version especially is possible at all, is you get these amazing lands. They're almost identical, but not quite. The difference being Secluded Courtyard can not only cast spells, but also activate abilities of creatures and creature cards of that color. I imagine, in terms of design-wise, it is from Kamigawa, so that's so that you can actually, like, ninjutsu your creatures with it. But in this deck, the main activated ability that you use it for is Bloodsoak Champion.
Mm.
It can get back Bloodsoak Champion, but Unclaimed Territory cannot. The only other thing to note about the lands, I would say, I'm playing a Plains at the moment. I don't know if you really need a basic land or not, but last week, I got Field of Ruin by the same blue-white opponent 3 times in game one and decided to put a Plains back on my deck.
Well, interestingly enough, blue-white had from what we're talking about with Simon Nielsen, blue-white had an extremely good win rate. I think it was the most positive win rate over a reasonable amount of people playing the deck for the tournament. So it's probably a good decision going forward if people are interested in playing blue-white to have the one-off basic in your deck. Anyway, continuing. Sorry, I was just a little bit of insight for something that I realized was good, because I know that I was thinking about the basic versus the non-basic land slot in other decks as well. So, yeah, something to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, because I'm so used to just put one basic in from Highlander, from Modern, where, you know, Path and that kind of thing, just like wanting a basic for Blood Moon, that sort of thing. But in this format, it's basically just Field of Ruin and like Assassin's Trophy, but Assassin's Trophy isn't really played, so it is interesting, but I agree. Blue White had good results over the weekend and is picking up, so probably worth it. Other than that, 23 lands, I'm pretty settled on 23. You could maybe play 24. I wouldn't play less than that, even with, like, the curve looks pretty low, but the deck is so full of mana sinks that I would tend towards 24 before 22. Alright, non-creature spells. Four Pyre of Heroes. This is your best card. Play four. There was a while when I was playing the fourth one on the sideboard when Monogreen was really popular, but honestly, if Monogreen's really popular, you should probably not play Pyre Humans.
I agree with that.
The matchup's not terrible, but it's not good.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it's winnable, but it's like not a matchup you want to play, so Pyre of Heroes is the best card in your deck. It's like informs so much of your deck building. I've got 13 one drops. This is okay. This is my biggest gripe with a lot of the other human decks, especially the Bant decks. Every Bant deck that I see that has 8 one drops in it and is nominally an aggressive deck, it does my head in. I hate it. So I have 13 because I am playing Pyre of Heroes, but also Priest of Forgotten Gods. So you always want a one drop with Priest. You always want a one drop with Thala's Lieutenant. And as well, because of the way your deck is built, so Pyre of Heroes requires like increments of 2 mana, which means you often have 1 spare mana, and you can slot in 1-drops to fill out your curve really well. There are 3 good 1-drops, and they are Bloodsoaked Champion, Thraven Inspector, and Unlucky Witness. Specifically in this like grindy version of the deck, you want like 1-drops that replace themselves or are recursive so that they are good to sacrifice to Priest and Pyre, and you just want like bodies to put things on with Lieutenant. I want a 13th 1-drop. Someone asked me about this, actually. I played a 4th Bridge Prowler.
Ooh.
Trent, you know this one?
Yeah, that's terrible.
I know this one.
Yeah, that's not good. Yeah, that one's real bad. That's a stinker. Do not do that, lads. People, ladies and gentlemen, do not put that card in your deck. Holy shit. That's bad. I don't know how you got to that, actually.
Okay, so at 4th Bridge Prowler, for those of you who aren't as familiar with bad cards from Aether Revolt, is a 1-mana 1-1, and when ETBs, you can give a creature -1/-1 to end of turn. So the reason behind this is it kills elves, it kills mono-blue spirits creatures, and I have also killed Illuminator Virtuosos with it. It is very high upside and very, very low floor. Like, very low. I can't emphasize that enough. Very low floor.
Doesn't attack into Thraebo.
That's not a huge downside, but that doesn't come up that much. But being a 1-1 just kind of sucks. The other options are Giant Slayer, which is very expensive and slow. Hunted Witness, which replaces itself, and I wish the token it made was a human. I think Kithion is fine, but more aggressive and doesn't work with like your sacrifice synergies, but probably fine. Those are probably the ones I would consider. The biggest problem with this human deck is the one drops. I listened to, I think it was Dominaria's Judgment, and they're talking about humans, and they were like, I wish this deck had Champion of the Parish or Avacyn's Pilgrim. And I was like, yeah, me too. This deck would be so good with either of those.
Noble Hierarch.
I mean, yeah, Noble would be absurd, but I'd take literally Avacyn's Pilgrim at this point. The answer is, I don't know. If play the 13th one drop, I think, for curve reasons. Pick whichever one you want. Personally, I'm playing 4th Ridge Prowler because it gives me the most 6 screenshots.
That's fair. That's a good reason.
That is not fair. This is not okay.
Gotta get that Twitter clout, Trent.
It's not clout, though, because people realize that it's rubbish. It's not clout. You'll become known as the guy who played 4th Ridge Prowler and got lucky. That's not who you want to be.
No, I don't know. Agree to disagree.
Sure. Agree to disagree.
It's the first card out in a lot of matchups. Any matchup where they don't have an X1, cut it. Immediately cut it. But I do think you want a 13th 1-drop just for curve, because you want a 1-drop every game, and a lot of the time you want a second 1-drop on turn 3. So just play more 1-drops. On the 2s, Charming Prince. Play 4 of them. Scrying is good. Flickering is good. Gaining life is... but it comes up sometimes. Thalos Lieutenant, second best card in the deck. Like, this is how you beat people. This is how you actually kill people. This is how your grindy deck sometimes has random aggro draws where you like play a lieutenant on 2 and then either play a second one or like have a way to flicker it to get a second ETB or something. Like, it's really good. And then I'm playing Priest of Forgotten Gods. This is So this is the card that a lot of these decks don't play. It is a grindy card that informs a lot of the rest of the way the deck is built, with like the recursive one drops, or like the one drops that replace themselves. It is very much a 0 or a 10. When you play it, a one drop into it on turn 2 against a creature deck, 10. Absolutely incredible. If it doesn't die, like, incredible. But other times you play against people without creatures, or you play against people who remove your other creatures, and it's terrible. So we'll get to the sideboard, but there is a plan to be able to take them all out, because like sometimes it's great, sometimes it's terrible. This is the big like question when you're thinking about humans, is do you want to play Priest of Forgotten Gods? Because if not, you have to like change all the one drops as well. You have to like cut the Unlucky Witnesses, cut the Thraben Inspectors, etc., and play like aggressive creatures, which you can do, but I kind of like it as a threatening two drop that like if you play it onto a load of decks, just have to have an answer for it, or it's going to take over the game. Three drops, Reflect Mage. It's bonkers. It does dumb things to your opponent's curve when you curve 1/2 Reflect Mage, which is why you want more one drops in your deck. Like you sometimes you just win games where you curve out. If you flicker it, it's ridiculous. It's really good against Heroic.
Yep.
Great. Play 4. Extraction Specialist. I have 3 now. This card is the big thing that people talk about with it is Charming Prince, where when you bring it in play, you can bring back a Charming Prince and then flicker it and then get something else back, which is sweet, but it's also just like a good value card. All of your two drops are good, right? Like Priest of Forgotten Gods doesn't need to be able to attack because you just want to activate its ability anyway. Thalos Attent comes back and you get the ATB, which is good, and then eventually you'll probably get to attack with it. Being a lifelinker is relevant against a lot of the aggro decks. It just gives you a nice buffer. So it's really good. I'm playing 3 just because you mostly want to pyre into it anyway. Sometimes when you draw it naturally, it's good, but other times you draw it naturally and for whatever reason you don't have creatures in your graveyard because they're getting exiled or they're not dying or whatever, and it's mopey. So I'm only playing 3, and I'm not playing the 4th one on the sideboard because a lot of people bring in Graveyard Hate against you.
Only smart people.
I do think Graveyard Hate is pretty good against this deck.
I don't think it's super obvious, though. That was really the point. Yeah, tongue-in-cheek, sure, but I think that's not super obvious.
Yeah. I think it depends on the game one you play. Because sometimes your game one involves, like, 2 Charming Princes and an Extraction Specialist, and your opponent goes, wow, this is a graveyard deck. Bring in my rest of pieces. I've, like, you know, but other times it's nose obvious because you played, like, a Thalia's Lieutenant game. So, yes and no, but the thing about the graveyard, like, bringing in Graveyard Hate is if, like, it's rest in peace, it's like, well, you had to spend a card to do that, and the rest of my cards still work.
Yep.
So it's, you know, Pyrovira still works, so it's interesting. And then the 4-drop, I'm playing a Hostage Taker. It's great. No one else is playing this card. It's so good. It has 2 modes, basically. It has the Reflector Mage mode, where you play it and just exile a blocker to attack with it, and it has the grindy mode, where, like, later in the game, especially if you pyre into it, which makes it cost 2 mana, you are using it as, like, mind control. And hitting artifacts is really relevant. Hitting portable holes, hitting unlicensed hearse comes up. So it is like that split card where it's sometimes it's a tempo card, sometimes it's a 2-for-1.
Yeah, I think it's really good.
Yeah, it's really good. Some matchups it matters more than others, but it is really good. Some fun interactions with Hostage Taker. If you Hostage Taker a creature and then your opponent steals your Hostage Taker, they cannot cast the creature you exiled with it. Learned that this weekend.
I had a good laugh when you wrote that one through. Like, yep, been there. Lived that one before.
Yeah. My opponent, like, active treason, my red black sack opponent active treasoned my Hostage Shaker that I'd put a Mayhem Devil under, and then there was this pause while they sat there with 3 open mana.
No, but please.
So that works that way. The other thing which comes up more commonly in this format is adventure creatures.
Oh yeah. Yep.
So you can steal them and then you cast, if you exile a Bone Crusher Giant and then you cast Stomp, you can then cast the Bone Crusher Giant, not your opponent. You do need red mana to cast the Bone.
Yeah, it goes into your adventure zone. It's good.
That comes up especially because, like, flickering Hostage Taker is always a little bit dangerous because it comes back in your end step, which means your opponent gets to untap before you can cast whatever creature they took. But not so if you steal a Bone Crusher Giant, because then you can stomp their face in response to a removal spell. You do then need red mana to cast the giant. The other day I did play a Secluded Courtyard and name giant to do that.
Nice. What a flex. So, that's a sick flex.
Yeah. It was so good. My sideboard, the sideboard's in flux. The big thing to note is there are 6 discard creatures and 2 Thalias. So I've got 2 Acquisitions Experts, 3 Cartel Freebooters, and a Sin Collector, and then 2 Thalias. This is a pretty clean swap for the 4 Priests of Forgotten Gods and the 4 Reflector Mages against like control and combo decks. Basically decks that don't have creatures. So that's why there's so many of them. The Sin Collector is the weird one there. It's only there because it costs 3 mana. I wish there was a 3 mana Acquisitions Expert. But the thought is, like, sometimes you have a 2-drop and you want to be able to pyre into a 3-drop discard creature, but honestly, it might just be better as the 3rd Acquisitions Expert. So, Acquisitions Expert is also good against red-black because you're happy to just play Rotting Rats. Like, Rotting Rats with Tribal Sanjis. And, like, you can recur it and stuff.
What is Rotting Rats?
He's got a card. In the battlefield.
Oh.
Yeah, 2 mana ETB, opponent discards card. The 1-2 body's kind of whatever, but like, you know, I played a game the other day where I went like, turn 2 Acquisition Expert, they discard a card. Turn 3 Charming Prince, flicker it, they discard another card. And then they killed it, and then I like, played an Extraction Specialist, go back, they discard another card. And it's like, they discard like, land, and some other bad card or whatever. But it's still 3 cards they're down. So that does matter in some matchups as well. I have 2 Unlicensed Sources for some Graveyard Hate. It's good against Phoenixes. It's good against Delve decks. It's a good, like, it's also, I mean, everyone who has played Unlicensed Source has worked this out at this point. It's also becomes a giant creature that just kills your opponent. So, really good card. I have a General Kudrow in here. This is, like, the 15th card. It's a flex card. It does a lot of things pretty well. It's, like, tutorable Graveyard Hate is probably the biggest thing. Being an Anthem is, like, fine. It's like a vulnerable Thalia's Lieutenant that they can kill to remove the Anthem. And I have yet to sacrifice creatures to kill a large creature, but I'm sure it will come up eventually.
I did it once. It was fine.
Yeah, that's basically Kudrow. It's a C-plus sideboard card in a bunch of different matchups, and it's fine. This design baffles me. It's 3 completely unrelated abilities.
Humans.
Kind of, but yeah, I mean, yeah, they're all related to humans, but like... Anyway, weird design. I have a Nightclubber in here. This is for mono blue and mono green because I really hate Lanar Elves. For a while, I had 4 of these. I had 2 main and 2 sideboard. Don't do that. Don't do it. 1's fine. There is a Hostage Taker for... So, matchups where either of the 2 versions of Hostage Taker I mentioned are good. So, it comes in against mono green because they can't kill it and it just exiles one of the large creatures. It also comes in against red black. Because part of your game plan is to like build up enough mana where you can play a Hostage Taker and steal their creature. And then flicker it. So it does a bit of both. And it comes in any matchup where the game is likely to slow down, basically. And then the last card in my sideboard, I have 2 Declaration in Stone. This is an interesting card, because my mana base only kind of supports Declaration in Stone. My mana base has 10 white sources, I think. Yeah.
Is that one becoming a bit more common? Declaration. I liked the look of it, actually. I actually thought that one stood out to me as a good choice.
Yeah, so I used to play Fatal Pushes, but basically Declaration in Stone is just like, it always answers the thing you want it to answer, and sometimes you get the random upside of like exiling 3 Phoenixes or something, or 2 Cavaliers or whatever.
Yeah.
But it just like is no nonsense, and giving your opponent a clue is like, it's card advantage for them, but you're a grindy Pyre of Heroes deck, so you'll probably make up the extra card, and them cracking the clue slows them down, which is what you want against most decks. Like, you want to play a slower game, and it just answers problem creatures. So it's good against mono green, because they don't have enough threats in their deck, so if you exile the 1 Cavalier, often, like, you get 1 blocker either way, and then you can kill them. It's also good against red-black, because Kalidus is, like, the only way they beat you, so you just want more answers to that that are not...
flimsy.
Like, Hostage Taker is an answer, but you need a lot of mana, basically, because you have to cast it immediately. So
it's quite good against Mirror Breaker as well. I know it only gets 1 half, but they don't get a token off it. It's also just good against Blue-Red, because every one of their cards just says draw a card, so it's just like giving them, turning one of their cards into another one of their, like, just face-up trading, you know what I'm trying to say, like, it just makes another card that does already what their entire deck does. They don't really care about that.
Their deck is already all wheel spinning, so giving them like another wheel to spin is not the worst thing ever.
No.
So, it's very catch-all. It is the biggest cost on the mana, So the mana would be very easy if you didn't play Declaration in Stone. The other thing of note that I'm not playing is I'm not playing Adeline. I'm not playing any double white cards because that also makes that also stretches the mana more. And I think you have to pick between like red card or like fourth color, double white spells, and non-human spells, colored spells, I think. Yeah, I think you have to pick like one or two of those things.
Is making one white mana easier than making black mana? Even though obviously it's like the Predator Push is a lot less flexible.
I mean, you can build the mana base either way. The difference is, if you're playing Fatal Push, you want on turn one to kill Monogreen's Lanor Elf. Whereas if you're playing Declaration in Stone, you're not trying to hit the Elf. You're trying to hit the Cavalier or the Old Growth Troll. So you don't need it till like turn four.
Take the time pressure off. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's the difference in my philosophy anyway, and how I've built it. Is also like, again, Fatal Push doesn't kill Kalidus. It doesn't kill like random, well, I mean, it can kill Kalidus, but
hard work.
So I sort of just like Declaration in Stone just being no nonsense. Deck in Stone's also better against Phoenix. It's, you know, but juries, that's definitely one of the slots that's still changing.
I like it.
Last thing, couple things. So that's sort of my overview. Couple questions that people reached out to me on Twitter with. Someone asked about Prowler. We've been over that. Trent thinks it's terrible.
It is terrible.
So you can take what you want from that and play whichever one drop you want. I think Kithian's probably the next best. Giant Killer is good in theory, but it's so slow.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with that.
Orthridge. Prowler.
You're not gonna have any copies, mate.
Nah, I'm not gonna have any copies. Oh, actually, I've got three. Holy shit! Look at that.
Oh yeah, no, you do get a 15th pick.
It's a battlefield you ever have. Yeah, look at that.
You didn't have them on Sunday when I had to order one.
No, I'm on Moto.
Oh.
Yeah, just seeing if I drafted it. Oh. I have three copies.
Oh.
That's extremely low for me.
Yeah. Other things people asked about. Someone asked about sideboard bullets.
I'm playing the same guy. I don't want to play this guy again. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you again, but this guy just bled 14 minutes of my time. You know what? I'm actually just going to give it to him. I just don't want to play that.
Speaking of time, I almost timed out my win. And I won game three with 6 seconds on the clock.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
It was, and my opponent was up about 7 or 8 minutes or something.
Yep.
Because pyre lines are really complicated. And I had a really complicated line where, like, I could shock to activate my Mutavault and play a lieutenant to threaten to kill them, but shocking took me from 8 to 6 facing 2 Phoenixes, so it like killed me if they had a removal spell, and I tanked for a good minute on that in game 3. Joys of Modo and chess clocks. Yeah, someone asked about sideboard bullets. Sideboard bullets good, because obviously you're a pyre deck, but you have to actually find really high impact ones. So like they asked about Zathod Necromancer, and in my experience it just didn't do enough because blue white's exiling your entire board and red black just like points the first stomp at Zathrud Necromancer instead of your other creature. So it and 3 is the like most crowded spot on the curve. Diathlete Daredevil was another one they mentioned. It's definitely interesting and something I've thought about. I've seen what's the is it creature that like pings a thing in all of its
Kessig Malcontent?
Is it Staticaster?
Staticaster, yeah, I've seen that. So there's lots of options. Play around with them. I don't know. I do think you have to keep the discard creatures, though, that core of like 6 creatures, because you need to be able to take out priests and reflector mages. So there's not as much sideboard space as there maybe looks like.
Staticaster gets more interesting when you're playing pyre, I think, as well. I don't think, because you wouldn't want 3 of them in your sideboard, but 1's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, we're talking about like specifically bullets, yeah, basically, yeah, with pyre. Yeah. I think the biggest thing is, do you want that on Nightclubber? And I don't know.
Yeah, interesting.
They're, like, pretty similar, but they're, like, slightly different. So, it's interesting. And the last thing is, someone asked whether I recommend it for a paper tournament. The answer is yes. I wouldn't have played it on the challenge if I didn't think it was good. But if you're going to play it in paper, definitely practice, because the pile lines are complicated, and there are a decent number of triggers. Yep. And, you know, in case you were looking forward to playing Pioneer, where you don't have to shuffle your deck every turn, bad luck. That's about all I've got on this deck. Well, that's about all I'm going to say on this deck for now. I could talk about this deck for hours. I didn't talk about like the way I built the mana base. I have so many thoughts on that. So feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions on that. Happy to discuss in length about the merits of Deserted Beach versus Shipwreck Marsh, for example.
Sick.
Really interesting stuff. Coming up this week, I think there's a monthly at Maze for Pioneer, and there's always Moto Challenges, so I'm sure we will have some events to talk about next week. It's 3 weeks till RCQs in Melbourne, so we're counting down to that as well. Got anything else anyone want to talk about now that I've finished rambling for 20 minutes?
How did you feel when you won your last match to get to make the top 8?
I felt very excited. It's an interesting feeling. It's exciting, obviously, to know that you're in the top 8, but it is a little bit anticlimactic doing it at home in my pajamas at midday.
What kind of pajamas do you wear?
Just like tracksuit and t-shirt, yeah, to be honest. So like not, you know, pajamas, I guess, but certainly not like I'm out at a tournament with my friends clothing sort of thing.
Ah.
Especially because by that point, everyone had left, I think. Like, Brayden was on Discord with me for a while. I think Trent was, you were watching it, but not on Discord because you were at POG. Nathan had left by that point.
I was trying to put it up on the projector, but funnily enough, I turned the projector on. The projector was projecting upside down. So I tried to fix that. Don't ask how. I don't know why that happened, but it didn't get an answer either. And then I just couldn't get it to connect through like the home connection system that's in, so I couldn't put it up there. So I was just had you in the corner of my eye whilst I was doing everything else, just vaguely watching, because I remember watching you lose to Ominous Seas and then beating the blue-red player. And then I believe, was that was the last round to make top 8, correct?
That was, yeah, that Phoenix round. That's the other thing. Also, I played 8 rounds. I didn't play against the same deck twice, which is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, the format's still pretty wide open. I did a quick breakdown for the Pioneer for POG on Thursday. I think I had 16. And I've got 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 different deck lists across 16 players, which is pretty good. Like, realistically, it's a pretty wide format. Especially with, if I was to take this 16, I'd probably say maybe half, if not more, people would be playing the RCQs or testing for them. So yeah, it's to have people testing and still be have a pretty wide spread of it all. It's pretty good.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So online tournament top 8s feel good, but I am very much looking forward to getting to play some paper events and hopefully top 8ing those with some of my teammates around, you know.
Just so long as you don't run into them when it counts.
I mean, I'm 1-1 against Nath. Beat Brayden the other week. You know, don't feel too bad about
I was referring to myself, but yeah, either of those two work as well.
Well, that's true. That's true. My lifetime record against you is very poor.
No, I didn't mean it that way. I meant the other way. I said, just leave, go away. Don't.
Well, thank you both for coming on this week and chatting to me about Pioneer and also Trent's Double Masters draft and his frustrating opponents.
I'm not going to sit through that. I'm not going to sit through another 15 minutes of watching this guy double queue. Like, I'm sorry, but that's ridiculous. Like, just especially after the way I beat him in match one. And then to get queued into him again. Like, I don't know if you actually watched that game. That game was astounding. Like, I played extremely well to win that and then get paired into him again. It's like, no. Well, no. That's not how this works.
Not today, buddy. Not for ten tickets, mate.
I apologize about my rants, but fuck that guy.
No, I love them. I love them.
Jonazo, whoever you are, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Oh my God. It's gonna be like someone from Melbourne be like crying.
If you're a Melbourne person, I have no remorse for you, sir. Absolutely none. If I can do a full podcast and it takes me one match of Magic, it's definitely not on my end.
Someone's going to turn up to POG tomorrow and complain.
Let's go. Let's go. I'm here. I'm here for it. I am here for it.
All right. On that note, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Sign us off, Trent.
Bye, Kyle.
Bye, Kyle.